Hello and welcome to another edition of Critical Q&A, the show where I answer your questions based on what you've left for me in the comments section of my Q&A videos or have sent to me by email at askchrisshelton@gmail.com. As you can see, I've been having a little bit of fun recently with some of my merchandise on my Critical Merchandise site, link below. I have created this, and I've created a couple other Xenu designs for just for fun that I thought you guys might get a kick out of, and if you want to check those out, your purchase of those obviously helps support me and my channel, and gives you something back in return that you can have some fun with. So, I have been having a really good time this last week, actually. We did a really good podcast. I interviewed a woman named Sarah Paquette, and we talked about reason and critical thinking and being rational and engaging with the opposition when it comes to political, cultural, social commentary, arguments, whatever. Both sides, all sides, whatever. You know, this is equally applicable to conservatives, liberals, this, that, the other thing. And I hope you guys will give that a listen because, you know, I put a lot of work into that podcast and I really would like to get a broader audience for it because I think it's obviously good stuff. Now, that all being said, we got a lot of stuff to cover this week on the Q&A show, so let's get to it. Continuing self-education. Thank you so much for your helpful series. I have learned more from you about Scientology than I ever did from reading Hubbard's books. I have a background in psychology and philosophy and was excited back in 1987 to read Dianetics for the first time to find out what I was allegedly missing in my study of the human mind. As I read, I remember thinking how shockingly shallow and offensive the book was, and how poorly written and unedited it appeared to be. I was getting more insight into Hubbard's personality disorders than I was about any modern science of mental health. But I always try to give everything a fair shot. I read the entire book, even though it left a horrible taste in my mouth, with the words charlatan and con artist constantly at the forefront of my critical thoughts. I decided there had to be something to this, however. How could so many TV commercials, book sales, and happy members numbering into the millions be involved in something as shallow and offensive as this? So I acquired a few other books on the subject by Hubbard, all equally full of empty rhetoric and odd self-posturing on his part. Eventually, I told myself that I would reread Dianetics just so that I really didn't miss anything. And in 1995, after the second reading all the way through, I realized there had been nothing there to miss in the first place. My question is, did you or anybody else out there notice these same two things about his books that I did? First, auditing is simply a reformatting of Freudian psychotherapy where the patient keeps free associating until significant events come to mind. Then they continue to talk about them over and over as more detail builds up. Eventually, the goal is to incorporate the subconscious material as it surfaces into the conscious mind where it is finally processed and integrated, causing the patient to feel better about the event. In Dianetics, it appears that Hubbard kept stealing concepts and techniques like this from Freud and other people, renaming them and claiming he discovered them. Second, everything in Dianetics and Scientology seems so quickly fabricated and sophomoric, without much thought put into it, such as the axioms, the eight dynamics, the tone scale, etc. My college students have come up with observations and data involving more depth and usefulness than Hubbard's. Did he think that charts with terms and numbers would dazzle his followers and validate his claims? In the actual fields of both psychology and philosophy, there have been some amazing and brilliant discoveries and theories made by the sharpest minds of our species. But Hubbard's terms, charts, scales, and approaches seem like a poor man's attempt to explain something that is irking him, a poor man's religion which costs a rich man's estate. Perhaps their more accurate motto? Anyway, could you comment on these two observations? Keep up the great work, Chris. Yeah, I wanted to read this actually in such detail. That's a long question and series of observations, and I wanted to go over that because this is a critical thinker view of Scientology, the kind of person who doesn't easily get hoodwinked by it. And it's a contrast to the people like myself and my parents and other people who did get hoodwinked by it because they did not apply critical thinking to what they were reading, and they got caught up in the commercialism of it, and the millions, the lies of, you know, there's so many people doing this, and it sounds so good, and it sounds so amazing. And even this man who, you know, was critically reading the material thought to himself, my God, there must be more to this. And I'm assuming man, sorry, it could be a woman. Anyway, that is the difference between a critical thinker and a non-critical thinker when it comes to this or anything else, is this person's clearly educated on philosophy and psychology, had some background with it, could recognize that Hubbard was simply a plagiarist and copier and liar, and also that he was kind of into self-promoting himself while talking about this, which he does all over the place. Now, to somebody who is not critically thinking about these subjects, they fall for this stuff. Right? Other people, me, right? We are not paying a lot of attention to what we're reading as we're reading it. We're reading it so that it will, to see what agrees with our own biases, our own viewpoints, our own ideas about things. And if it meets that criteria, if it matches up with enough of what we're already thinking, oh, this must be really good stuff. And that's a real object lesson in how to avoid getting caught up in this stuff in the first place. And that's a lesson I wish somebody had taught me earlier in my life, because that's not how I would read things, especially when I was reading Dianetics and Scientology materials. I was reading them so as to agree with them. That was the view with which I was studying Dianetics and Scientology, and that's why I didn't observe the things that this person observed until after I got out. And unfortunately, that's the case with a lot of ex-cult members, is they are not able to critically view what it was that they were involved in until, you know, after they come out of the, you know, euphoria of how wonderful it is, and are able to look more objectively at it. So I think the reason that, you know, I think that's what's going on mentally with people when they're studying this stuff from a non-critical angle. And I wanted to give this out there because this question all by itself is kind of an answer to how do I avoid falling into these pitfalls and traps and whatnot that people like L. Ron Hubbard lay for the unwary and the uncritical, right? A little bit more education, a little bit more critical observation or analysis of what they're studying, and they wouldn't have fallen for Hubbard's nonsense in the first place. So that's some comment on that. Ozzie Goo. I have three family members in the Church of Scientology and was wondering if you could maybe do a video on how to approach them and change their hearts and minds with some really good facts and arguments that they can't twist and turn around. I've been reading a few of Hubbard's books and trying to get a handle on the lingo so I can at least argue I have some actual knowledge on the subject, but there's just so much intertwined crap and so much stuff to wade through. Any help greatly appreciated. Yeah, you don't have to be an expert on Dianetics and Scientology in order to help facilitate getting family and friends out of it. But you do need to understand how cults work and how the mind control mechanisms and stuff work. There's no way around that. And I've talked about this before, and I do have some blog articles and stuff on it. I will link to them in the comments section or the notes section of this video. But this is the advice that I can give you. See, there's no one-shot question. There's no universal thing you can do that will get somebody out of a destructive cult, nor is it, generally speaking, a one-conversation activity. You have to understand why they're involved with it. You have to get them to talk about it, be willing to discuss the subject with you, and in a non-critical way, in a non-antagonistic way, in a very non-hostile way. They have to feel safe talking to you. And you have to get them to see for themselves what's wrong with the situation that they're in. And that is a crafty thing to do. And it's an individual thing. There's no broad, general way to do that. You have to talk to the individual in front of you. What works for your father might not work for your mother, might not work for your brother, might not work for your sister, might not work for your best friend. Every one of them could use an individual approach. And the reason I say that is because every one of them is there for their own individual reasons. And that is important, right? You know, one person might be there because he feels that Scientology is helping him with his marriage. And another person might be there because he feels that Scientology is helping him with his shyness and introversion, right? There's a whole array of things that Scientology appeals to people and gets them hooked in on. And you have to, you know, get them talking about this, find out, right? Draw information out of them through a lot of listening, not through a lot of talking on your part, not through a lot of arguing on your part. You have to get them telling you what they like about it, why they got involved with it, what problems it solves for them, right? And this takes time, right? It takes trust. It takes honesty between both people, right? You don't have to sit there and say, oh, wow, that's so amazing. I just love everything you're telling me. You don't have to, you know, fake it. You don't have to, but you also can't be an unsafe person to talk to, right? They have to feel like you honestly are interested, that you honestly care. You can't do it rotely, right, or robotically. And you have to then get, you know, once they're all talking about all the positives of it, you can then start opening up, well, you know, maybe some of the negatives about it. What is it about that thing that they don't like? And this is not just Scientology, this is anything, right? But once you kind of strip off the things that they really are, you know, in adoration, euphoria about, you go, great, okay, I really understand that. That makes a lot of sense to me. Is there anything about it that, you know, that ain't so great, you know, that you wish was different? Have you ever had any trouble with it? Have you ever had anything you didn't like about it? You know, oh, it was all so wonderful. It's just, you know, you got to get past that what they call in Scientology, the veneer, the social veneer, right? It's all so wonderful and great, and there's nothing wrong with it. I mean, come on, nobody is like that unless they're just being robotic. But you get past that, and you get them openly and honestly talking to you, and then you can start addressing maybe some of the downsides to it or some of the things they don't like about it, and you can start kind of gently, slowly easing into what is it that maybe they're not so enthralled about with it, right? And then you're having a more honest conversation with them about the subject, and they can start, you know, talking more critically about it. Although I'm sure, you know, there's not going to be a lot of criticalness for a very long time. It's going to take time to do this. And I'm talking like a long time. It doesn't, you know, depending on how long the person's been involved with it. If they've only been involved with the subject for, you know, days, weeks, months, it's not hard to yank them out of it. But if you're talking about somebody who's been involved with it for years or decades, I mean, it's going to take it's going to take months and months of work and gentle work, okay? Because you can't give them the impression that you're trying to get them, you know, to hey, stupid, you know, don't you realize how dumb this is? Don't you realize what an idiot you are for being involved with this? That can't ever be any part of the conversation, right, at all. So I think you get the point of what I'm talking about here. And now I'm going to say again that there is no way that you can do an effective job of this, I don't think, until you get educated on what destructive cults are all about and how they operate. And that requires reading and listening or watching on YouTube. There's videos and briefings and discussions and lectures or good books by the likes of Margaret Singer, Robert Lifton, Steve Hassan. These guys have put out a lot of literature on this stuff. It's not hard to find. John Atack has even written books about this. I think Opening Minds is a book where he talks about this sort of thing. But Steve Hassan has really condensed a lot of information into a very short format with his books, Combating Cult Mind Control and things like that. So check those out. They are very good resources, and they give a very good education on the subject. And that is, you have to know that stuff more than you have to know all the ins and outs of something like Dianetics and Scientology, because if you start going in on what's wrong with Dianetics and Scientology, the reason that approach doesn't work is because this person will know more than you do. And if you, even one error or flub or mess up on your part And everything you say, they can discount from that point forward because you got that wrong. You clearly don't know what you're talking about. So trying to take the argument to them on their ground isn't the way to go about it. And again, that applies with anything, not just Dynamics and Scientology. So I hope some of that is helpful. There's a lot more, you know, to know, but I think those are some general guidelines for you. Mr. Marathon 1989. Marty Rathbun calls critics of Scientology the anti-Scientology cult, ASC. Are they? Do people ever go from one cult to another? Do cults talk about other cults? I believe that cult critics are the opposite of a cult. Okay, yeah, I believe that cult critics are the opposite of a cult too. And I do not think that there is any anti-Scientology cult out there. I think that that is a strategy, a strategic position that was adopted in order to counterpoint and try to make less effective what Tony Ortega does, what I do, what people who speak out against Scientology do, by trying to make us the enemy of what it is that we're talking about when we're not at all. I am not at all interested in being a cult leader, destructive cult leader, any kind of leader as far as that goes. You know, I'm just trying to help people out with some advice and general ideas and stuff that, you know, answer questions from experience that I've had and knowledge that I have. And that's not a cult, right? By any stretch of the imagination. So, so it's really just kind of a way, a kind of silly way, really, of attacking Scientology critics. It's something the Church of Scientology would do. And it surprised me that Marty Rathbun would come out with this kind of an approach to criticizing other critics of Scientology that way. As far as answering your questions, though, yeah, people do go from one cult to another. It happens all the time because you have people who are in a destructive cult, an undue influence situation, where they're used to being a follower, not a leader, where they're used to being a non-independent or non-critical thinker. And it takes work and effort to change and educate yourself out of that kind of a situation. It's not something that just, oh, the light bulb comes on and suddenly, I'm no longer affected by any of this. We're all affected by undue influence, by promotion, by advertising, to one degree or another. And when you see people who fall into destructive cults, they have been very heavily affected by it. And when they come out of that situation, they might crave and want someone else to tell them what to do, tell them how to think, tell them what is right and wrong. And I didn't fall into that, you know, good. But some people do, right? Not everybody. Not everybody by any stretch. A lot of people come out and they go, wow, that was just really stupid. And they get themselves educated on why it was stupid and how it was stupid and how they fell into that so that they don't jump into another cult. But I have seen it happen. And yes, some cults do talk about other cults. I mean, just look at, you know, well, that's all kind. I'm not even going to give any specifics because people are going to give me crap about it. But yes, there are lots of groups that attack other groups, all the time, right? Destructive cults do it all the time, that's for sure. Scientology is down on, any other practice than themselves. They might have an external sort of PR front that they're, you know, multi-denominational, that they're very accepting, that they'll let anybody in. But inside Scientology, they laugh at Christians, at Catholics, at religious believers. They think they're dupes and idiots and morons for following Christ and following, you know, some other religious belief or something. They truly, you know, one of the hallmarks of a destructive cult is they think they're the only ones who have the only answers that matter. So everybody else is getting it wrong. So I imagine that, you know, quite a few destructive cults make a point within their membership of degrading and criticizing other cults. I'm sure it happens all the time. Donald Drumpf, how common did you find it during your time in the actual Sea Org that you would run into someone who would listen to LRH recordings and then imitate phrases from them back during the day at random times? Or constantly talk out loud to themselves, complaining they were the only one who could get things done correctly. Constant demands for stats and speed of the particles and the like seems like a lot of self-hypnosis going on. Oh, all the time. This happens all the time. I used to do it constantly. I mean, I still do sometimes, not just with Scientology phrases and stuff. I mean, we all do this. This isn't a destructive cult characteristic. This is just being human. We find things that we find interesting, funny, entertaining, amusing, and we repeat it to other people or we adopt it for ourselves. Now, as far as I get the point of your question, though, you're saying a bit more deeper than that, right? Like taking on the personality and characteristics of the destructive cult leader and starting to act and talk like them. And yes, that happens for sure within destructive cults. It happens within, you know, all groups, because that's what a leader, part of the role of a leader of a group is somebody who generally is liked, admired, listened to, respected, and emulated to some degree or another by some members of the group. You know, not everybody, but a lot of people in groups will find themselves repeating the phrases and ideas and catch phrases and whatnot of the leader, right? I mean, you know, make America great again. How many people are running around saying that, you know? And how many of them would be saying that if Trump hadn't said it, right? I mean, I'm not calling Trump a cult leader. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying that we adopt these phrases and words and whatnot and ideas from our leadership. So it's what we do. So yeah, that happens all the time. And in Scientology, it definitely did. There were all kinds of things Hubbard would say. You know, there was one way he would acknowledge in a lecture, he gave an acknowledgement to somebody, meaning an answer to a statement, where he gave this exaggerated thank you, you know, and Hubbard's telling, you know, thank you. And I would say that all the time, you know, just as a joke in conversation and stuff. Somebody would say something to me and I'd say, thank you, you know, this kind of thing. It happens all the time. So there you go. Jennifer Isaacs. When it comes to the military, it seems that Scientology is influencing veterans. Especially of late, I've seen Scientology messing with many vets going through PTSD. How can people stop abuses done to vets? Can the justice system and government be improved in any way to stop such people sending propaganda to scam others, whether they are a vet or regular citizen? If so, what are some ideas to make separation of church and state more effective? Okay, I don't know about vets specifically, but I do know that the most effective way I've seen of diffusing Scientology's influence with any group is by writing to the leaders, leadership of that group and giving them like a concerned letter, concerned email, something like that, a real personal communication with some information about the Church of Scientology and what it does and how it influences or tries to influence groups through its social betterment front groups and that sort of thing. And by giving those facts and information to the groups and saying, are you aware that this group that's helping, you know, or saying that they're trying to help you people are a front group for the Church of Scientology, generally, that alone alarms people. They're like, whoa, I didn't know these guys had any connection to Scientology. And they will backpedal on it and they will pull their support for that front group because Scientology hides its connection to a lot of these front groups, right? Way to Happiness, the WISE, you know, business groups, that sort of thing. They hide the Scientology connection. So that's the most effective way I've seen to do that. And the other way, of course, is just to counter facts with, you know, Scientology's facts with real facts, right? And point out that Scientology doesn't believe in things like psychiatry, psychology, PTSD, mental illness, right? They think that's all a scam from Big Pharma and that sort of thing, when in fact there's lots of statistical information and facts and evidence to show that it is not just some big scam. So if you counter that, you know, by giving them that information, they'll generally not be so supportive of Scientology's activities. Blue Dance Lily. Most of the stories I have heard about Scientologists are of those who eventually join the Sea Org. It seems that everyone eventually does so, but I assume not all Scientologists end up there. Are there those who remain public their whole life and only move up the bridge through the local churches? Or do they get up to clear locally, then have to move to Flag or LA to go through the OT levels? Are there those who just get to clear and then stop and never choose to move on despite the pressure to do so? And if they just remain in their local churches, do they have to become staff eventually? Or can one just do some of the levels and be peripherally involved? It seems there is so much pressure to move up and get deeper and deeper into the organization, but I can't imagine that's true for every Scientologist. Okay, well, this question basically is asking me to explain all of Scientology in, you know, a couple minutes, and I can't really do that. But I can say that, and I think I've mentioned before on the show that there are three basic levels to the hierarchy of Scientology. There are your public, there's your staff members at the local churches, and then there's the C organization. And those levels are how people move up in terms of their dedication and time commitment to Scientology. Those levels have nothing to do with the bridge to total freedom, which is the services of Scientology that you do. Whether a public, staff, or Sea Org, you move up that bridge from nowhere to, you know, all the steps that you do up through CLEAR and all the way up to the OT levels. And anybody can do that. Anybody can do those things, whether you're public, staff, or Sea Org. No, there's no idea that everybody's going to move up to be staff or move up to be Sea Org. There's lots of people who get into Scientology, stay public Scientologists their whole life, and die as public Scientologists. Or there's people who join staff. Staff is a 2.5 or 5 year contract, and people commit, you know, to that much time for staff, and then they're done with staff, or they can re-sign another contract and keep going. When you're going to the Sea Org, that's your billion-year contract. That's a full lifetime commitment. But, you know, you can see from me and others, lots of people have not committed to, you know, have not stayed within that group their entire life. I think the figures are something like 5 or 6. For every person who's in the Sea Org right now, there are 5 or 6 other people who have left, right? So it's, you know, it's a pretty big revolving door situation within the Sea organization. So that's those two things, those two levels, you know, public, staff, Sea Org, going up the bridge to total freedom, you know, pays your money, do your time, get on up to OT. Those are the two, you know, ways that, or the two class systems or whatever within Scientology. So anyway, that's the simplest way I can explain it. Let me know if you have any other questions about that. Flash answers time. Steve Aldrich. Any way to guess how much money the average Church of Scientology public member gives is ripped off to the Church of Scientology per year, whether that is a donation or payment for services? About how many people bail out of the organization per year? I have no idea on either one of the answers to those questions because I don't have any current statistical or raw data from the church about either of those things. So I couldn't really say. I can just speak in the generality of depending on how much, you know, how committed you are to Scientology will determine how much money you're going to pay. There is no average. I don't know that anybody knows what the average is. And as far as how many people are bailing from the organization, I don't know. But I do know that it's shrinking. I know more people are leaving than joining. I know that. So that's about all I can say on that. Jonathan Mark, how archaic is the record keeping at orgs? A flag video from 2004 shows a woman wheeling around paper files on a cart. Are auditing records digitized yet? Or do Scientology orgs lag significantly behind the rest of the world in IT? Yes, they are archaic. They use paper files, paper folders. Auditing folders have not been digitized, and I don't know that they ever will be because they are kept by hand in auditing sessions. The auditor sits there and writes on the worksheets. So, you know, they could do a full recording, you know, digital recording and whatnot of the sessions and put them all on, you know, chips or cards or something like that and get do away with all that writing. But no, they're not anywhere close to that level of IT yet within Scientology world. And they follow all this stuff and keep all this stuff in paper because that's how the systems were set up when L. Ron Hubbard was around to set them up. And so they just keep going that way because that's what Hubbard said to do. You know, you're supposed to have central files folders with a folder for every single person who's ever bought something in the church. They have digitized those files, yet they keep the paper files because Hubbard said you're supposed to have a file folder. So that's the thinking within Scientology on that. Naveen Darkroom. Chris, what are your thoughts on Freemasonry? Don't really have too many. I've only met one person who ever in my whole life who claimed to be a Freemason. I wasn't particularly impressed by what he told me about the organization. It seemed kind of like, you know, an old man's club. of people who get together and with their, you know, little secret signs and handshakes and stuff and meet up and, you know, kind of like a Shriners, you know, group or something. I mean, that's really the impression that I got from talking to him. And I don't know. I don't really have a whole, you know, whole big thing on Freemasonry. I don't buy into the whole Illuminati conspiracy theory of Freemasonry. I think if you watch my videos on or have heard me talk about conspiracy theories, you know my thoughts on that particular subject. So I don't have, you know, sort of I kind of have a negative on, you know, there's sort of more of no thinking about Freemasons more so than a lot of thinking about it. And maybe I could, you know, educate myself on it, do a whole lot of study on it and that sort of thing, and know all about the history of the Freemasons and stuff. But it's just never really been that big of a interest for me to try to figure that out, because I don't get into the conspiracy theory of it. And so we've come to the end of another episode of Critical Q&A. I hope these answers were interesting, informative, and entertaining for you. Please give me more questions, more feedback, more whatever, positive, negative, up, down, sideways, whatever. Leave it in the comment section below. I love hearing from you guys. I love your questions. I love your feedback on my answers. And of course, I love it when you come check out my critical merchandise site and purchase my merchandise. So please do that too. All right, guys, I will talk to you next week. See ya.